Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Welcome to episode number 139 of the Eat PhD Team podcast. It's a bit of a bonus episode for you today from myself and Emma Story Gordon, ESG Fitness. It is coverage of an exclusive live that we did with the EIQ Nutrition community last week. We run these live sessions every single week for EIQ Nutrition. And they are live sessions that Em and I answer questions on or discuss current topics. Usually questions are from the current coaches that we have within the community, and they can basically be on anything and everything. And normally we keep these questions and answers within the exclusive space, but we thought, let's share some of it. So the questions this week that were submitted from other coaches were excellent, and we covered topics such as positive age beliefs and their impact on health, the expectation effect, supplementation for ADHD, supporting vegan clients, fat loss with PCOS, Jane Fonda, considerations for fat loss with gastric sleeves, supporting clients who struggle to stick to their goals, and many, many more. Remember, for EIQ Nutrition, most of the people that are in the community are current coaches who are looking to support their clients more. If you'd like more information on EIQ Nutrition, you can visit www.eiqnutrition.com. On there, you will find a podcast specifically relating to the course and what it involves. The final intake for 2022 begins on August the 15th, 2022. Obviously, if you have any questions, drop me a message on social media, or you can sign up on the website. Enjoy. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm great. So I spent today going through some of the old webinars and downloading them and things, and it was extremely exciting looking at us. Well, actually, I saw some lives from us from 2020. That was quite the traumatic experience. I feel like I've aged about 10 years in 2 years. I spent today going through some of our previous videos, and they're very insightful. Well, sometimes we're very insightful, you know.
Yeah, do you know what? Because I was looking back at the first webinar that we did, and I was like, this is great content. I don't even remember writing this, and it was my own slide.
That's how I feel about stuff. I'm like, oh, turns out sometimes we say some quite things. I'm not scrolling, obviously. I'm just getting up the questions because we've got excellent questions today. Also, as a reminder, make sure if you want to ask Nicola any questions that you watch her lecture before this weekend. We're doing a podcast with her on Monday. I've pinned the post on the group if you have any questions for her. I've just watched the lecture and it was...
Oh, I'm going to watch it tonight. Oh, very excited.
It was great. I've actually decided that it's going to be my thing. I didn't do it tonight because I didn't have any wine, but it's going to be my thing where I make a night of it and have a wee glass of wine and watch the lecture and get my questions up. Just a wee treat. I just love learning stuff from new people.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what? I've also seen a preview of Joe's and it looks real good. Like, I've just seen the slides. I'm very excited about it.
That's the next speaker, by the way. Great. Yeah. So I recommend. Reading anything exciting before we start?
Reading? Yeah, I am actually.
What are you reading?
It's called, what is it called? The Happiness Secret. Or no, The Happiness Advantage.
Oh, I've not heard of it.
The whole premise of the book is essentially that we believe that success leads to happiness. And that's why successful people tend to be happy. But his research shows that it's actually... you're more likely to be successful if you're happy. So it's the happiness that drives the success as opposed to the success that drives the happiness.
I love that.
And then he shows like loads of like interesting research around it. He brings up some interesting points about research itself as well, that even the way that we do statistics, like we take away the outliers, when actually they're actually quite interesting things to study. Like if you've got someone who is way, or like if you've got a few dots of people that are like way above average, normally we just like exclude those because like, oh, they're outliers, they're making the data messy. But actually they could probably tell us a hell of a lot about like, how can you be extremely happy, or how can you be extreme like responder to X stimulus? So that was quite interesting. And then what else was he saying? I think that was basically it. But he was saying that like there's a big flaw in psychology research because 90% of it is on like anxiety and depression and bringing people back up to like average levels, as opposed to looking at the other side, like what about people that are flourishing? Like why aren't we studying them, those people, so that we can see how we can become flourishing ourselves? So yeah, it's a good book. I'm only like 3 chapters in, I think.
Do you know what's weird is that that was what my talk was at Fitness and Wellness, and not that, but
flourishing health,
like flourishing health, but like as in a lot of people focus from on mental illness and move into like mental health or non-mental illness. But what our roles are as coaches and personal trainers is to move people from fine to how can we move people from fine to flourishing, and like that side of the mental well-being or just the overall well-being is the side that's our role, that's within our scope of practice, that's what we can be focused on, that's what the mindset is, the self-help, what exercise can do and all this stuff, and we don't focus that much on it. And flourishing has only become like a framework in the last couple of years, which is probably why a lot of the research hasn't really focused on that as much. So I imagine it will probably change, but I think that's cool.
That's a good point as well, that is like that's something that we can help with, whereas mental illness like isn't something that we're qualified to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that like the methods to get from someone from like a depressed state to a more functioning state are very different than to get someone from like I feel okay but not amazing to feeling amazing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, like there's medication and there's therapy, and then there's okay, well, you can't mindset your way out of depression, but you know, once you've got that support, it's like, okay, well then what do we have control over to some degree? How can we reframe and all of these things? And so I think that's
yeah. One thing he was saying is that he went to this is the author, that he went to, or he was invited to speak at a conference on mental health. And it was like day one, depression, day two, anxiety, day three, eating disorders or whatever. And he's like, this is on mental illness, not mental health. And sometimes we kind of get the two confused, or like it's the same, like, oh, mental health must mean that X, like the same way there's still stigma around therapy, like, oh, you must have a problem if you're going to therapy, as mm-hmm. opposed to like, actually, I just want to be better than I am, because I think there's scope for that.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. I've been reading two things. I've been doing some research around aging. I'm turning 36 in September. And, you know, my brother said 36 was traumatic. He said that with a wife, a house and 2 kids. So I can't wait. But I've been thinking about it a lot. So I've been over the last like 9 months, I've been thinking a lot about kind of this is your one life, and really trying to be intentional with the way that I live my life, because you never know when it's going to end, right? And that's obviously for personal reasons and stuff. Anyway, and I mean that in an empowering way, not in a negative way. And my holiday definitely reminded me of that, of like, it's so easy to get into a routine of overworking and just kind of going through the motions. And then when you take yourself out of it, you go, oh, actually, this is what makes me feel whole, and this is what's important to me. Anyway, so I've been interested in like some of this aging stuff, and I was listening to something the other day, and she's a researcher in aging, and she does a lot of work around like aging beliefs and what she calls like positive age beliefs or negative age beliefs. So obviously societally we get bombarded with messages like aging is bad, it causes illness, it causes pain, memory loss, etc. And she did some really cool research in people who had like specific genes that predispose them to dementia, and people that obviously were predisposed had a certain risk of developing dementia, right? But people who had this increased genetic expression of these genes, right, if they had positive age beliefs, they reduced their risk of developing dementia to the same as someone without risky genes at all. It was a 40% reduction in their dementia risk just by having positive age beliefs. And in the research, like, it's positive age beliefs are associated with like reduced Alzheimer's markers, improved decision making, improved enhanced lifespan. I think it was 7 years enhanced lifespan, and better recovery from injury. And obviously they think, they hypothesize it's to do with like reductions in stress. And we see the same thing with feminism and patriarchy and within like people of color, where when you experience what is effectively like this negative stigma, weight stigma is another one, stigma for one of these like minorities that you have, it causes a stress response and it actually impacts your life. And there's some cool research around women and how actually being afraid of what when you're walking home and being on edge all the time actually increases your chronic stress response, and actually that can lead to things like long-term health conditions. And that is one of the issues of being a woman. But it's like, this is kind of all over, but I've never heard of it in terms of aging before.
So this is interesting, because remember when I was obsessed with the Expectation Effect book 2 weeks ago?
Yeah,
this all comes into that as well. So like, this is the same research, like if you expect to, so, and they showed it in like cancer diagnosis as well, like if you at the point of diagnosis like expect negative outcomes, or if you expect to get through it, like that had an impact on your likelihood of living longer. And also just aging, like people's perceptions of aging, like do you think that aging is negative, or do you think that you'll live a long happy life, and like genuinely it impacts how long you live, which is mad to think.
So cool.
It just your like expectation of these things, which is probably the same research, right?
Yeah, I imagine. I've heard
quite a lot of people speak about how they believe, and I fully believe this as well, like I think life gets better as you age. Like, I fully believe that my 30s will be better than my 20s.
30s are just so good.
Yeah, and I'm sure that when I get to 40, I'll be like, this is better than when I was 30.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It's really, really, I think it's really cool. And in the last, like, 6 months, I've fallen in love with J-Lo. Like, I just think she's great. And I'm like, she, one of the kind of tips that this researcher uses is to have these, like, positive age models where you're like, models of age, whatever, where you like, you think, look at them, they are just consistently excelling, and she's like just got remarried and just did Super Bowl and all this stuff, and I'm like, do you know what, you are who I'm going to look at all the time, screw everyone that's younger than me, like you are my person, even if she's
so that's like, I didn't even think about that, but that must be such a good thing, because when I was reading about this in the Expectation book, I was like, yeah, I get this, but if you don't have those expectations, like how do you manifest them? I mean, manifesting would be one way, but actually having role models who are that much older that you're like, oh yeah, 50, you can still be running around in a bikini looking fucking amazing and remarrying and starting a whole new chapter of your life and blah, blah, blah. Like, and you see people doing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I love the Kardashians. They're like 5 to 10 years older than I am, and like they're doing all the stuff, and I just think, you're constantly ahead of me, and that's like, that to me is really positive. But one of the other things she said is like what she called age belief journaling, where you journal for like a week or review your last week of portrayals of aging, so any positive portrayals of aging you've seen and any negative portrayals of aging you've seen, even if it's things like anti-aging adverts, negative portrayal, or watching J-Lo's documentary, positive, and going through it and being like that's what you expect.
Wait, has J-Lo got a documentary?
Of course she does. Netflix, baby. It's great.
Oh, I don't have Netflix.
Oh yeah, no, you don't have TV, mate. So I'll show you it when we go to Lisbon. It's great. So yeah, I thought that was very interesting. That's weird. I guess it obviously makes sense that it was in that book, and it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah, but it is amazing. Like, I mean, all of that stuff blew my mind, but it's the aging thing is incredible as well, because people think of it as an inevitability, like age is inevitability, but like the things that we think come with aging aren't necessarily. And I mean, we're preaching to the converted here, but anyone that's like lifting weights, like exercise is the best anti-aging thing you can do. Like, fuck all the creams and stuff, like that's the best thing that you can be doing.
Mm.
And true. I imagine everyone watching this is already doing exercise.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, I forgot.
Oh, that's the age, babe.
Oh,
Oh.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's okay. I'm still 35. And when you said aging is inevitability, that sort of ties in with other stuff I've been reading about the finitude of life and how aging isn't inevitability. You could die.
Well, I mean, like getting older is.
But yeah, but you could die at any moment. Some people.
Well, yeah, yeah, that's true.
And I was telling my friend about this too, because I've been reading some stuff on this, and she was like, "Oh, that's depressing." And I was like, "It's not. It's the most liberating thing to say. This could be the last time that you ever have this day. This could be the last life that we ever do. Like, let's absolutely make it amazing." It's not a depressive thing. It's like we have to remind ourselves of the luxury of getting older. Like, that's
yeah, like it's a privilege to be able to age, because not many that well. Many people don't get to age, so then you should see it as a privilege. So I met a woman on the plane, and she told me something that her counselor had told her, and that it seems so morbid, but I've been doing it for like a couple of weeks, and like I'm still living off the buzz of it, but it's going to bed thinking that you might die, like thinking that you're going to die that night. And then when you wake up, even if like you've not slept, or like you have a dog and it's like sick on your back, like no matter what awful thing you're waking up to, you're waking up, and it's like it just feels incredible. Like I've been struggling to get up in the mornings, and I'm just like, but what a privilege to be able to get up even if I'm tired. Wow. And it's actually worked for me. I'm like, I didn't really think it would work, because she was like, I know this sounds really weird, but go to bed thinking maybe I'm gonna die. And I was like, oh my god, this is amazing.
That's, imagine seeing that someone on the plane. But
I know, right?
Yeah, it would be like dodging.
I mean, it was in the context of her telling me that her husband had died, and that like one of the things her counselor had said was like, you've still got so much to live for. Go to bed every night thinking this might be your last night, and then you'll realize how much you have to live for, and you'll wake up in the morning being like, thank god I'm still here.
Mm. I like that. And oh my god, why is it just gone again?
What
I was gonna say, I don't know.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know. Oh no, that's what I was gonna say. Every morning I wake up and I say thanks for being alive.
No, I knew that about you, yeah, but I didn't know if you went to bed.
I don't go to bed thinking I might die.
Thinking I'm gonna die.
I'm not sure that I'm on that page yet. Mm. But maybe one day.
You'll get there one day, babe. You'll catch up with me one day.
One can hope. Shona said, what's the book about aging? So I haven't actually read the full book. I was listening to the researcher, but the book is called Breaking the Age Code. Emily said, aging well is my new goal at the moment. I'm 38 in September, and I want to be in a better place as I age than I was when I was younger. Well, I'm sure you probably already are. That's the benefit of self-awareness, right? Even though you might hate what you find out about yourself, at least you're learning about yourself and you can change it.
Oh yes.
Anyway, moving on. Okay, questions. Oh, Annie said, Jane Fonda did an interview about age with Glamour and thriving at 85 above all expectations she had. I'm channeling her. Love that. Also love Jane Fonda. Jane Fonda is such a good example of this. Just in every way, Jane Fonda's great. Oh, love Jane Fonda.
How many times are you going to say her name?
Jane Fonda. Just love her. I've got an image of when I was like six, and I used to go into my mum's bedroom when she first started exercising, and she would be doing this to Jane Fonda in front of the TV.
Get out!
Okay, Rachel's question. I feel quite sad. Annie just hashtag Jane Fonda. I'm so here for that. Rachel's question. I know there's not. Okay, hold on. A client of mine has been researching into some natural ADHD supplements to help with symptoms. She's read supplementing with L-tyrosine is a good option. I've had a look into it, and it seems as though it helps with mood and concentration, but I was just wondering what your thoughts were and if there's any actual evidence that supports the proposed benefits.
I looked this up, did you?
Yeah, but go for it.
Well, I mean, I don't have that much to say. There's like a theoretical benefit, but I haven't found much research that shows that it's beneficial in ADHD. Have you?
No, it doesn't exist. I think there's one type of ADHD, which is like the inattention, which it may support in terms of. So the way that it might work is to help increased levels of dopamine and norepinephrine or noradrenaline, and they can potentially help with mood and memory. But that's only one type of ADHD that might benefit, like the inattention one, not the hyperactivity or impulsive one. And the research is not, like the research that was done in mood and memory is not in people with ADHD, it's just in general. And there's no evidence for it. What I would say is I definitely wouldn't be recommending it. I would just say there's like, oh, you can get a list of foods that naturally contain tyrosine. And I would just say, let's include some of these foods within your diet. And I wrote some of them down because I knew that I would forget them. Almonds, avocados, bananas, cheese, milk, peanuts, poultry, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, soy, yogurt. There you go. There you go.
Excellent.
And I would include them in their diet, but I wouldn't say that, like, there's no evidence-based supplements for ADHD other than actual medication.
I actually now remember looking at this in regards to, because I think I saw some like ridiculous claim in The New Scientist, which is actually normally quite legit, but it was like, eat protein to improve your mood because of L-tyrosine, right, and like this amino acid and blah blah blah. Then I was like trying to figure out what the saturation point of it was, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like pretty low. It's like increasing your protein intake isn't going to exponentially make you happier and happier. Like the benefit of L-tyrosine is like saturated at a relatively low amount of it, so you don't necessarily need to supplement with it, is the whole point of it. That you, like, if you are eating some of those foods, like, you're probably going to be getting in enough. Mm. So I had a live with Catherine today, and she told me a fact about creatine. Okay. And because someone had asked, like, could we not just eat enough meat to get in creatine? And it was something ridiculous, but it was like, what made me, I'm still thinking about how gross this is, but it was something like 1 kilogram of herring, like the fish. And you know when they like roll it up and then stick it like a ball mop thing. Shouldn't eating 1 kilogram of that to get in
creatine. That's really making me feel sick. I'm so full right now, and that's actually just gonna push me over the edge.
So thanks, Catherine, for that one.
But natural, isn't it? So
yeah, natural. And also it was, I think she'd worked out it was like 1,800 calories if you wanted to consume enough herring to actually hit your creatine target. Good luck with that.
Like a bodybuilder's diet, although it's herring, a lean meat.
Quite fatty, I think. It's quite a fatty dish, yeah.
I've never actually eaten it, I don't think.
My dad used to eat, like, the pickled thing.
Oh, vomit. I mean, I love your dad, but no.
Yeah, it's not okay.
Catherine's here. She says delightful. Thanks for that. Okay, Donna's question. Aside from the fat loss injections, is there anything else that could help reset leptin receptors? Assume just fat loss, but wanted to check as I have a client at the end of her tether, insistent she is adhering to calories, walking 10,000 steps a day and doing workouts, not seeing any results, and over 30 BMI. She wants to know if there's anything else she could be looking at. I've had the adherence chat, but said I'd ask about this too. Thank you.
So one thing to point out here is that if you're sticking to your calories, even if you're completely leptin resistant, you still lose fat. Like if you're still in a deficit, you would still lose fat. So that's not the problem here. Like if you're less leptin sensitive, then you might have higher hunger levels, but it wouldn't stop you losing body fat if you're sticking to your calories. Now it's a different story if she's coming to you saying, I'm struggling so much to stick to my calories. I'm wondering if it's because I'm leptin resistant, right? Which it probably isn't, but then you know that it's hunger, and then you can look at her diet and be like, how's your protein? How's your meal timing? What size of like meal portions are you eating? Can we get in more volume here? Blah, blah, blah. Like you can look at the things that are going to impact hunger, but I don't think it's the leptin problem here.
I agree. And to be honest, the thing is that kind of like what you said, even if it is leptin resistance, it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't matter. You can't change that. Like you said, all you can do is drop body fat. And I know that it's frustrating, but it is adherence. And it's thinking about how else can you have that conversation with her? How else can you support her adherence? How else can you word it for her? How else can you help her in tracking? Is there a different way that she can track her food, pictures, food diary, etc.? Have you had a phone call with her where you run through what she ate that day and then go back and then say, okay, so you said you ate oats for breakfast. Did you have that with milk or water? What toppings did you have on it? And then go back through again and say, okay, so just to confirm for your breakfast, you had this. That's what we call like a dietary recall that you do as a dietitian. So it's like you run through their day and then you go back and you almost assume, you say, okay, so you had chicken and pasta. What kind of sauce did you have on that? So it's not even like, did you have it? It's like, what kind of? And it just kind of encourages people to go, oh yeah, actually I had that, from a non-judgmental place. Those are the types of things you want to be thinking about, as opposed to on a molecular level, what can we change there? Because we can't do anything about that.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that you could do is use the leptin as a way for her to admit that she's not being adherent. Because you're kind of like, exactly what Amelia is saying, like you're opening that door non-judgmentally. Okay, well, actually, if you are storing a lot of body fat and you are a bit leptin resistant, that might mean that you're much hungrier. Is that something you're struggling with? Because if hunger is really high, then it can be really hard to stick to your calories. Like, is that happening for you? And then they might be like, yeah, actually, I do find that I'm really hungry and I've really struggled to stick to my calories. Great. Now you know the problem, you can come up with a solution for it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think kind of teasing that out of her or him.
Yeah, that was good unconscious bias. I don't know if she did say she, so that's fine. Okay, Annie's question. Hello, hope all's very well, ?
Yes.
Good, me too.
You? Good.
Yes, great, thanks. I just have a protein powder after my salad for dinner, though, but a protein bar after, straight after my salad dinner. And it's just a little bit too much for me. I'm feeling a little bit uneasy.
Quite a lot of volume there, babe.
Quite a lot of volume. And in Greece, I had no volume, really, because it's not the type of place that you get volume. And I'm like...
No, it's much less oily, isn't it?
Oh, but just...
Yeah, insane. But
yeah, not used to the volume. Okay. Would you say there's a best type of vegan protein powder to have? And if not necessarily... If we have vegans, would you recommend supplementing with leucine? More the average vegan that's likely hitting below protein ideals. I know you've done your videos on them, just interested. Also, the main reason I ask, I feel there's a line between needs, must, etc. Hope this makes sense. Annie, it makes sense. Stop asking. It makes sense.
I love Annie.
So realistically, that's a lie. When I had a bodybuilder who was vegetarian, I did actually recommend that she took essential amino acids with her protein, with her meals, because she wasn't having complete protein and she was a bodybuilder. In gen pop people, I would never recommend it. I would say try to mix up your protein sources as much as possible. I would say maybe try and have two different protein sources at one meal. In an initial starting point for someone, I do say these are the types of proteins we want to mix, like legumes and brown rice or whatever it is. But I don't expect people to stick to that at all. I'll say this is just an example. Usually I'll say if you have, you know, some beans with dinner, then try and have some grains with dinner as well or something like that. That's generally the route I would take. I really think that the 95% of people don't have the capacity to think about that stuff when they're just thinking about trying to make sure that they're even getting enough protein, let alone making sure it's exactly the right amount of protein. So I wouldn't generally recommend it. They won't do any harm other than financial harm, but I just don't really see. I think for the amount of impact that it'll have, it's relatively useless.
Yeah, I would probably explain it to the client and be like, this is the theory behind it. If you want to take it, fine. But realistically, it's going to be a very small benefit, if any. And I'd probably go for essential amino acids as opposed to BCAAs or leucine on its own, and just like have it with some squash while you're eating your meal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't do it. But I mean, I'm not a vegan, I'm a vegetarian. So it is significantly easier to get in enough protein. But I also know that I don't get in enough protein. And part of me now is like, not it's a little bit of an experiment, I guess, but I think I've actually built muscle recently, and that's not to do with being vegetarian, that's to do with training more and recovering better probably. But I definitely eat less than optimal amount of protein. Same. So it's just quite interesting to see what you can almost like get away with. And I do wonder what the variations here are. And like, I guess it comes back to what we talked about at the start with research. Like, am I more of an outlier who is more mesomorphic and potentially builds muscle easier, which means do I need slightly less protein to get the same benefit? Or you could argue that the other way, that if I build muscle easier, then I would need more protein to build that muscle. I don't know. But it's interesting when you kind of like do little experiments with yourself, that I know that I would have to really think about my diet a little bit more to get in enough protein. And I just don't care enough at the moment. But I still think that I've built muscle.
In terms of the actual vegan protein powder, I think some of them now are fortified with the full amino acid profile. I don't know a specific one, but I know that I've looked before and some of them are fortified with something.
Yeah. I don't know where they, because you know that whole thing about like BCAAs being made out of duck feathers, which isn't very vegan.
I don't think I've heard of that before.
Yeah. Apparently it's either human hair or duck feathers.
Is that why it tastes like it does?
Probably, yeah.
Huge.
Which makes me think, like, where do they make the vegan ones? I'm sure I did look this up and it was something. Anyway, you can get them, but they're probably way more expensive to be like fully vegan.
Soy is complete protein source. It's lower digestibility, so you kind of get, whereas with whey you get this like immediate peak and then
muscle protein synthesis.
Yeah, soy will be a bit slower. But soy is a decent option. Okay, Pavla's question. Now I'm going to caveat your question, Pavla, because you've just started in here, but in general what we do with lives is we don't indirectly coach specific clients. We answer generally, so there's a couple questions on here from today, not yours specifically, but in general, that are about specific clients, which we don't answer, but we will talk about how we would navigate the specific situation as a whole. And we are very happy to have you. Also, she says, hi, Eminem, and everyone, happy to be part of EIQ. We're buzzing that you are part of EIQ now too. I was just wondering if you can give me a bit of advice. I have a client. So again, we don't need specifics, but I'm going to just do it for the purpose of today. I have a client, 29, PCOS, type 2 diabetes, BMI 35+. She's trained with me for a few months now, but there's no progress. We are doing weight training together with some HIIT and boxing because she enjoys that. However, we struggle with her nutrition. I've tried so many things, so wondering if I am missing something. We tried tracking, but she can't stick to that, so we removed it. We tried focusing on adding more protein. I've explained why it's important, and she sticks to things for a few days and then goes back to her pasta. I even researched calories, protein, and takeaway shops near her work to give her the best suitable options for her lifestyle. We sat down and went through her reasons why all of this is important to her, but nothing has changed. I've sent her a value worksheet several times, but never get anything back from her, including check-ins. I feel like I'm failing her because she doesn't have the results she came to me for. But on the other hand, I don't know how to literally get her to do stuff, even if it's just the tiniest little habit change. Thank you very much. Can't wait to see you both soon in Lisbon and Scotland.
Woohoo! Okay. I think we've had this question quite a lot because it's quite common, but it does sound to me like she's not actually ready to change. And it sounds like you've gone through, like as Amelia was talking, I was like, oh, I wonder if she's done X. And then you're like, and I've done blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, you've done all the right things. Like, you've asked her to think about why she wants to make this change. You've broken it down into even the smallest change. So let's take away tracking. Let's take away all of this. Let's even go and eat at takeaway restaurants, but make these choices. Like, you've literally broken stuff down for her and she's still not doing it, which kind of says to me, like, I mean, I would probably turn this around on the person and be like, you've said this is important. I really want to help you, but can you tell me what your barriers are? Because there's a reason that you're not taking this action. And like, normally I'm very much like, no, it's not normally self-sabotage. It's not normally this. Like, normally people are just like have false expectations of weight loss or get distracted or get bored of the process or are impatient or something. But it does sound like in this instance, even when you've done all the right things and she is saying she wants to change, that there is something psychologically going on there of like, is there a reason? Is there an underlying reason that maybe she doesn't want to change that you need to kind of break down?
I completely agree. I think you have a couple of options. You can focus on her training and you can actually say to her, look, let's put the nutrition on the back burner right now because for whatever reason, you don't feel like you want to prioritize that, and that's fine. So let's focus on your training and other healthful habits. Just because her BMI is really high does not mean that you have to focus on fat loss right now. There are so many other things that you can do in terms of, okay, well, let's just look at like some basic nutrition habits. It doesn't matter about scale weight. We're not going to be taking that right now. Can you just have protein for breakfast? Just breakfast every day. Or can you just have protein in your dinner every day? Like, it's really basic stuff. It's not focused towards fat loss. It's focused towards her health. And then revisit it once she's been consistent with her exercise, consistent with one thing, or just eating a piece of fruit with her breakfast every day, one thing like that. And then in a month time, be like, okay, well, let's review things. How do you think things are going? What next step would you like to take? What do you feel that you can commit to right now? And then take it really slowly. A lot of this is just about meeting the person where they are, and you've done so much already in such a short space of time in terms of all of these things that you've given her. But if she doesn't understand why she wants it, or even if she doesn't want it, then it doesn't matter how much stuff you give her, it's not, if she needs it, she needs to figure out for herself within her, okay, well, now I'm ready to make this step. And to be quite honest, at the point that she is, I would imagine there's probably a bit of a self-belief thing going on where it's much easier to deal with not putting the effort in than dealing with feeling like you failed again. And if she's coming from a background of dieting and feeling like she's failed a diet, why would she want to do it again and feel like she's going to fail? So doing things that are like way smaller, like just getting her to go to the gym however many times a week that you see her, is huge. And in a month, you really celebrate that and be like fair play, you've been consistent now twice a week in the gym for a month. Like, that's exceptional. And then these little things, and I would focus more on that side of things. And like, she's got her, I know this sounds silly and it's kind of counterintuitive in terms of what we've just said earlier on, but she's got her whole life to drop body fat. It doesn't have to be like immediately that you're seeing all these results. Sometimes that can help with adherence, but if she's not even getting off the first hurdle, there's no point in pushing that straight away.
Yeah, I think that's a great point about exercise. And like, it sounds like she is consistent with that part. It's the nutrition that's holding her back. So even if she is enjoying that, you can kind of link the two, right? You can be like, okay, let's leave fat loss for the moment, but let's focus on exercise. And you're already doing this really well. But that does mean that, you know, if you're doing your exercise, you need to eat protein before you come. So this meal before you come, let's focus on making sure that's right. It doesn't matter what you eat after it. And then the thing is, like, you're going to be less hungry because you've eaten a chicken salad or like chicken and veg or whatever. So those kind of things can help as well. Just taking the pressure off fat loss and reminding her that, and reminding yourself, because if you say you feel like a failure, you are doing her health the world of good simply by her exercising. Even if she never lost an ounce of body fat, she is improving her health drastically by exercising. So you've not failed her. It's just that the fat loss is maybe going to take more time, or maybe it's not the right goal at the moment.
Agree. Can I just say, I just had a wee moment of gratitude for how much I really appreciate these lives and how much I love having lives with you and everyone watching. And great questions. So
I'm very grateful as well, just for everything.
Same. Okay, Faye's question. Hi guys, I'd like some help with a client, please. She has trained with me on and off for 4 years, originally throughout her pregnancy and post-birth, and then lockdown happened and she has dipped in and out of my online coaching since. After the baby, we got her down to pre-wedding weight, but during lockdown, she put it all back on. She's been back with me on and off for the last 8 months, but in that time, she's had a 3-week holiday in Florida. And whilst there, I found out she had a huge problem with her back, which of course led to time out from exercise. She's been back in my group for the last month. Last week, she messaged to say that she couldn't stop overeating, having portions that were too big, the kids' leftovers, snacking for no reason, and wanted to sign up for my premium membership so I could really help her. Today she's messaged to say she's not signing up again. She's deleting my fitness pal, True Coach, social media, and giving up on the proper approach because she's worked her arse off for a week on 1,350 calories, which is not the target I set, and put on 4 pounds, and also had someone ask when baby number 4 was due, and she's not pregnant. She said that yesterday she had one piece of toast and a tea, and that was it for the day. She is 40 and has yo-yo dieted all her life. What would you do now?
I would get her on a call.
Same.
Like, at that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, she just needs talked out of it. And it, like, she's 40 years old, right? She knows logically that that's not the answer. Like, what, you think it's actually going to help by giving up? No, of course it's not. We just need to work things out. And she'll want to know that you're there for her. Like, and be like, these things happen. Like, I've had clients that this has happened to before, and we can work through it. But the thing to do now isn't to give up. Like, you're never going to get results if you give up. And you absolutely can do this. Like, fat loss is completely within your control, but you've had a few knocks one after the other, and that can be really hard to deal with. Let's make a plan. And also take the pressure off her, like, signing up for anything again. Like, I had almost exactly this situation with someone who messaged me being like, I'm going to leave Commit to Six. I can't remember everything, but, like, you know, I'm essentially quite similar to this. Like, I'm done with this. Like, I've put on all the weight that I lost on my holiday, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, I'll cancel your direct debit, but you actually still have a week. So I just want you to do these three things tomorrow. That's it. Don't worry about anything else. Like, take the pressure off everything. Just do these three things. Then email me at the end of the day. Cool. She did that for 3 days. Now she's like, yeah, I'd actually quite like to stay on. Like, literally, people just need, like, a little bit of support at the right time and a little bit of accountability, and not just like, let's, like, try again tomorrow. Like, be really specific and make it quite easy. So, like, all I want you to do tomorrow is make sure that you wake up and that first thing you go for a walk and you do this really easy 3-exercise workout or something, so that they're like, oh yeah, I went for a walk, I did a workout, and I had fruit and veg with every meal, or like, I had veg with every meal. Great, I've ticked off today. And then you start building a little bit of momentum with them and motivation with them again. And then they're like, okay, actually, by day 3, you kind of have that motivation again, and you've got that momentum. And motivation comes from taking action. So it's getting people to take that first step when they don't feel like it yet. That's the key. I think all she needs is, like, a good phone call and, like, a talk down.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have much to add other than, again, it's about meeting her where she is. And it's easy to look at her, knowing her, knowing that she can track, that she can do all this training, that she can do all these things because she's done them before. But if she was a brand new client coming to you, you wouldn't have her doing all those things. You would have her starting at the basics. And I've actually taken on some clients for the first time in, like, 9 months this week. And I had a call with one of them the other day, and she said, like, I said, what exercise do you do? She said, I walk. And for a time I did 5 minutes of stretching before I went for a walk because it was physio stuff. And I don't want to give up overeating. I enjoy it. I know that I should, but I don't want to. So I'm telling you now that I'm going to resist it and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, crikey.
Very self-aware.
Very self-aware. She's an organizational psychologist, and she's 61. And so she's great, right? And but it reminded me of just, like, I'm so used to clients who've been with me for years now, and we've got a really good relationship. But it's like, that's what most clients need. They need that straight up conversation, and they need you to start way beyond, like, way further back than, here's your value spreadsheet, here's your surfing the urge, here's your box breathing, here's your, like, they don't need that stuff for a long time. And so treat this client like you've never worked with her before. Yes, you've got the relationship with her, you know her really well, but don't avoid going, well, I know that you've done all this stuff, so you can, and go, right, this person is overeating all the time, they're maybe not exercising, and they've got a bad relationship with food. What are the minimum things that she needs to do to start off with? And then it's coming into what you were saying, Emma, of, like, have the call with her and say, like, what are these 3 minimum things? As an example, do them for a week and then start there, because she's very clearly very overwhelmed and fed up.
What's quite interesting as well is that it's just a good example of it. It's not actually, you know, new information that they need. It's just like, and even accountability is a bit of a buzzword. It's like being told this is what you need to do, especially right at the start. Yeah, bring autonomy back, like, 3 days later on. But, like, just right at the start, like, tell them what they need to do for 3 days so they don't have to think about it. But then they get the buzz of, I ticked all those boxes. Like, I feel a little bit good about myself. Oh, actually, I'm kind of enjoying this now. And now I'm back into a routine. And now maybe on day 4, I am going to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those little, like, essentially that's one of the skills of a coach, is getting people back on track once they fall off track, because it always happens. It's not like a matter of if I fall off track, it's when. Everybody does on the pursuit of a goal, like for the rest of your life, really. At some point you're going to fall off track, so you need like a method of getting people back on track.
Mm-hmm. Faye said, thank you, I tried messaging her on various platforms, but she's obviously deleted them all and she's not reading or responding, but I'll dig out her phone number and we'll get a call in with her. Smart. Okay.
But also, just because like it sounds like, only go so far, right? Like maybe text her and be like, hey, I would, you know, if you're ready to have a call, I would love to help you, because it sounds like, you know, you've fallen off track, but we can absolutely, like, whatever. But also, if she genuinely doesn't want to do it, just leave the door open and be like, whenever you're ready for that call, no pressure, you don't have to sign up, I just want to make sure like you're okay and that you're like you're on track or whatever. But if she has deleted everything and like blocks your number and stuff, just be like, okay, well, you know,
don't be anxious.
Someone for stalking.
Yeah, yeah. What's it called? Protesting behavior. When one person backs off and you get harder, you go harder in.
Yeah.
Okay, Faye's second question. Another client has just checked in with me. Her B12 injection is a week overdue and she suffers with very low energy in the week leading up to the jab. So as you can imagine, her energy is zapped now with it being late. She's asked whether a higher carb diet would be beneficial during these periods of low energy, or is there anything else that you would recommend in this situation to help increase energy? Carbs won't do anything. If it's a B12 deficiency, there's nothing that's going to impact it other than B12 injection. And even something like, if it's mild, like Floradex is pretty great, because it's got a decent amount of B12 and some other vitamin minerals in it, but she's got a B12 deficiency. There really isn't anything. It would be like dropping a penny in the ocean. I don't know if that's the right metaphor.
I think it's a pebble in the ocean, but whatever. Same thing, isn't it? No, isn't it just a drop in the ocean? A drop in the ocean. What's the other words to that?
I don't
even know. Change in the weather.
I don't know what it is, but I introduced my best friend to Wagon Wheel, which is obviously an ESG.
Oh, that's my tune.
And we line danced and outside our tent to it with a glass of wine.
Yes. Yeah, that, you must know that song.
Drop in the Ocean.
Yeah.
I don't, Emma. I don't know if anyone knows this song. Faye, so in answer to your question, Jay, there is. Drop in the
ocean. That's really gay.
That sounds like you singing it. What is it?
In the weather, I was praying at you. Okay, well, I'll send you
it. I'm judging you. Who sings that song?
I've never heard of him, but I don't know. Ron Pope?
Oh, yeah. Well-known Big Ron.
Hey, Meg, yeah, Ron, obviously.
Meg said, a drop in the ocean, a change in the weather is a classic.
Yes, thank you, Meg. Jeez.
Team drama. She says team drama. What team drama? Drop in the ocean.
Teen drama. I don't know what that is, but oh no, it's definitely from like One Tree Hill or something.
Oh, good old One Tree Hill. Sorry, Faith, but like I know we've kind of brushed over your question, but there isn't anything you can do if it's a B12 deficiency. She needs to just get her injection. Sorry that it's useless, but it would be foolish just to suggest anything else.
Yeah. I guess the only other thing is if she's in a deficit.
Yeah.
Maintenance.
Yeah. Here's a question. Hey guys, my first ever question, lol. As if this is your first question.
Wait, whose first question?
Kira's question.
Huh.
Anyways, I have a client who came to me looking to step away from tracking, work on her relationship with food, and stop feeling like she needs to be in a leaner body. She came home from her holiday and just felt, she said she felt so uncomfortable in herself and really didn't want to continue this way. She was asking, is there any way for her to diet and work on everything she wanted to? I'm very unsure whether to push it and encourage her to keep working, but I also am mindful that she is saying she's unhappy. I do think it's a rash decision, purely because she's only just home from her holidays.
This is a really hard one, because like technically, if you can get someone to a place where they are just living their life, but they're also in a little bit of a deficit and they don't feel like they're dieting, then yeah. But I think it's much harder when someone has these like preoccupations with body image, like previous dieting experiences that were maybe negative, like all of that. Like, I don't know how possible that is. Now, it's so individual, like it's your own mindset. So if someone's like, you know, some people diet quite easily because they don't really think about it that much. They're like, oh, do you know what? I want to lose a bit of body fat, so I'm going to take out my, I don't know, toaster at breakfast and just have an omelette instead. And then for dinner, instead of rice, I'm going to have some potatoes. Great. I've dropped like 300 calories. I don't really feel like I'm dieting, like I'm just going to make these small changes. But that's often like a rarity. And if she already has like these like previous dieting experiences, might be harder to get into that mindset. I don't think it's impossible, but you kind of need to, this is why it's hard for us to like suggest what to do with your clients, because we don't know them. And for some people that is possible.
Yeah, I think the fact is that she came to you saying she wants to stop feeling like she needs to be in a leaner body. So her fighting against you to say, I want to be in a leaner body, is 100% expected. That's going to happen. She's told you all along, I want to be in a leaner body. I just don't want to want that anymore. So now is your opportunity to really challenge it and say, okay, well, what do you think the reasons are? I know that you feel a little bit bloated, so let's give it a couple of weeks after your holiday and things have settled in. Before we do anything, I'd like to give it a couple of weeks just to see how you feel once you've got on top of all your habits and stuff. And then if you still feel like this, then I reassure you, like, we'll reassess this in 2 weeks. In the meantime, do you think anything else has changed that is making you feel like you need to be leaner? Did you spend a lot of time comparing your body to other people? That's one of the drivers people want to be leaner. Do you feel like you are feeling like you've been out of routine for ages? You want to feel like you've got some structure and control and you use your body for that. Has that changed since you got back from your holiday? And think about like all of the reasons that she may have felt and ask her, like, obviously don't just give her the ideas, but be like, what are all the reasons that you feel like you often want to be in a leaner body, and how many of those have changed aside from the fact that you feel a little bit bigger because you've been on holiday, which is totally normal. And most people do feel a little bit bloated and a bit bigger when they come back from the holiday. Because it might also be that she's feeling guilty because of the food she ate and when she attaches. So if you think about like patterns of behavior and thought processes that you've had, if she's always had this association between eating bad foods and restricting, that's her automatic thought process. And she's just spent a week probably eating bad foods. So the thought patterns in her brain are like already pre-programmed to go bad food, bad food, bad food, restrict, restrict, restrict. And it's easy for her when she's a bit bloated to go, oh, I've definitely gained fat, this is the thing that I need to do. But it could just be in that automatic thought pattern of bad foods means restrict. And so challenging her on those things is important. So like, it's not like we can, like Emma said, it's not like we can say, yes, you can do that, or no, you can't, because it's so specific to the person. But this is your time to shine, so to speak, in what she wants to achieve. These clients are notoriously difficult and they're pushing back on you. But your job as a coach now is to go, okay, well, this is what you wanted to achieve. So I'm going to like show up for you in that kind of fierce, compassion way and say this, like question all these things. The answer is not right now, but it's not never. It's a couple of weeks time. That's all I'm asking, provided you do all of this other stuff first. And then just see what comes up. She might still want to diet, in which case, again, you can reassess it. Or she might just be like, yeah, do you know what? I actually feel fine. I've had 2 weeks of training and eating my regular food and actually I don't want to anymore. You just don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it kind of reminds me of like when people go from dieting to maintenance, or even like dieting to quote unquote bulking, and then they feel a little bit different because they have put on a little bit of body fat. And actually it's the feeling different that's the trigger, because it's like, I'm not used to this. And even 2 weeks of that now being your body, you're like, oh, like actually storing this little bit more body fat makes absolutely no difference to my life. And now I'm used to it and I'm used to being in this body. And it was something I noticed when I put on weight, when I had back surgery, I actually got really comfortable at heavier weight because I was then, that was then my normal. But most people don't leave it long enough. So there's this like knee jerk reaction of, I feel a bit different, I want to go back to what I know, which was being leaner. And actually when you just sit with it, you're like, huh, I'm actually all right at this, like, you know, a little bit fatter now.
You see that a lot with people who recover from HA, the initial weight gain is like, oh my god, this is horrendous, and actually when they recover their period, they're like, actually my body image is better now than it was before. And it's like, yeah, because you just let, like, you let that settle in. And Meg said it's a very extra extra song. My friend once did an entire interpretive dance to it for GCSE drama.
This is what we're gonna have to do in Lisbon.
Was your friend Emma?
Yeah, it was me.
That's exceptional.
No, I never got to do any parts in drama.
Did you not? Why not? No,
I was once the smoke machine person. Didn't get a role. I just had to turn on the smoke machine at certain times.
Aww. I was the cream in a 7-layer sponge cake.
Ooh.
There you go. That was my role in the school play. Harriet said, hi both. Love heart emoji. Love heart emoji back. I've just taken on a client with a gastric sleeve. I know she needs a high protein focus, but do you know if there's anything else I need to be aware of?
She should have a dietitian.
I don't know if it's private. I don't know what you get.
Oh yeah, maybe. So I don't know off the top of my head actually, but she will be more likely to have certain deficiencies.
Mm.
So yeah, I didn't actually see that question before we came on.
It was just an hour ago. God, Harriet, come on.
Come on, Harriet.
Long enough to know.
Like 2 weeks.
I would say deficiencies and food volume, like be mindful of food volume, because packing out meals with salads and stuff like that, which by the way, I was calling like to Lisa on holiday. I was like, should we get a salad for lunch? And she's like, what's a salad? And I was like, oh, no. Well, let me tell you. She's on it though. So yeah, you have to be mindful of our food volume. That's really it. Food volume and deficiencies. Hydration. They're the main things. And so she'll probably be like little and often eating. Or not often, but like, you know, no big meals. Okay, Alessia's quiet question. Hi, you two. Sorry I'm cutting it fine with my question for the live. Another one. Gosh. But one of my clients is pregnant and the midwife has just cleared her to continue to lose weight to get her BMI from 31 to below 30 whilst in the first trimester. Any glaring red flags you think I need to be aware of in terms of setting her up for weight loss? Thank you. I think you'll probably know most of them in terms of like what happens to women in their first trimester, in terms of she's probably going to be driven towards carbs. Like that's going to be your thing. And you, so I would, again, be super flexible with how you're doing it. If she's tracking, just be super flexible with that. Her metabolic rate, her requirements are not going to change in terms of her calorie requirements, but make sure you emphasize that you might want to lower a protein target and actually she can have more of them from carbs. Be mindful that like, well, the reason she's allowed to lose weight is because they're going to be worried about her risk of gestational diabetes. That's the thing. So it doesn't really matter her carb intake, provided that she's losing weight. So I would just make space for that. I would give her options for things like rice cakes or pop chips or things that will help her nausea, which are not biscuits and cereal, like, because I know that like you are driven to any sort of carbohydrate, right? Or like fresh fruit and stuff like that that is going to help her with her nausea, but it's not going to push her calorie intake too high. I would obviously make sure she's having her prenatal and all her supplements. If she's not supplementing with iodine, by the way, and it's not on her prenatal, that's something a side note, make sure she's supplementing with iodine, because it's not commonly known, and if she's in a deficit, she's definitely not going to be getting it from her diet, and not all prenatals have it, so I would check in with that. But other than that, not hugely.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add on that.
Okay, I think that's it.
Great. What great timing. It's exactly 7
and great questions.
Yeah, excellent questions.
Okay, thanks for all your contributions. Much appreciated. Can't wait to see Emma's interpretive dance to the song.
I'll get thinking. That was a start.
Do it on stage at IFS. No, at Level Up. It feels more appropriate.
Maybe both, who knows.
Alyssa said that's a really good point about food swaps and iodine. Thank you. You are so welcome. Okay, everyone. Goodbye.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.